10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Really? They can't come up with more than 10 episodes of any show that I actually like?
Sterling every damn night, Sterling every damn night. Come on over. Midnight Misfits rejoice, we know Sterling's your choice. Come on over. Sterling's on from coast to coast, he don't brag and he don't boast. He just hits it out of the park every night when it gets dark. You know Sterling's so cool, his mama didn't raise no fool. You'll have fun, so tune on over.
Look at that. See, I push a button and nothing happens. Let's do this again because, you know, I love tight shows. Now, this is strictly my fault. All right. So now the jingle ends and you hear.
Hi, I'm William Devane.
It's no big deal. She's not the real. Find a new appeal. She's so nice. When it's just a misdemeanor, you got to get over it.
Love trips,
love trips, setbacks, all can come. Pick up on the
bank.
Love and devotion. If the traps have lost emotion, it's going to subside. She's gone. But it's just a misdemeanor. You got to get up for it.
Loved her from the start.
What you gonna do? When I get good at go, and my friends all tell me when I'm playing the fool.
Too bad.
She makes me feel so out of place. But then you're gonna realize that there's something over.
But don't you know?
It's no big deal.
Make it stop.
She's not the real. Find a new appeal, she's so gone. But it's just a misdemeanor. You got to get on over it.
Loved her from the start.
You're what I need.
It's 11 past the hour, 11 past the hour, national radio show, live radio show with Walter M. Sterling.
When you probably should be sleeping, that's when Walter comes creeping. Just turn off the light, 'cause it's Sterling every damn night. If you hear a bunch of complaining and a lot of mansplaining, your dial is set right. It's Sterling every damn night. The competition hasn't got a chance when Sterling's on the air. They just put on the gold show, 'cause let's face it, they don't care. So settle in for radio done right. Vital in for radio done right by a man of above average height. You're dialed in to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
Mm-hmm. And he's younger than me. And I know that he's younger than me because he still has a lot of friends. You know, like, he still, like, likes a lot of people. Like, he's a little too happy. He's like, ah, Becca's sister's babysitter's dog's brother's boyfriend's bun. Like, give it up, all right? And grow up and get some enemies, okay? Too peachy keen with everybody, you know? I'm like, that's a red flag, you know? And I need a scene being like, yo, she a thought. Then I'd be like, my man, you know? Like, I don't know. These are old jokes because he broke up with me. I know, and I didn't even think he could do that. I was like, are you holding up?
Did you get your consent? There it is. As we get older, science shows, as do stand-up comics, that we have fewer friends every year. Now, think about it. When you were in elementary school, back when you actually attended things, you were in elementary school, you were surrounded by your peers. You and I were surrounded by people our age, stuck in the same situation, good and bad, as everybody else. We were the same height. We had the same basic skills. Our parents dressed us the same. We were the same. And therefore, pretty much every kid in that classroom was my friend except for Chuck Sapp. Chuck Sapp would threaten me with my life every day, and he was nine. And to the point where my father, did your father ever do this? My God, my father actually went up to Chuck Sapp's house and knocked on that door and talked to his father. Now, my dad was not like a fighting guy. My dad wrote my mother a poem every day. He was that dad. He was the dad who would walk through the forest and explain to us the beauty of nature, the wonderfulness of cycles of nature, and how the world was, in fact, perfect. It would heal itself. That was my father. For him to go to Chuck Sapp, a bully's father, and say, I don't know what, but it was a good 2 weeks before Chuck bothered me again. He always threatened me. Did he ever hit me? No. But it was a constant threat. I dreaded leaving. I dreaded leaving the house, and yet I left the house, and I walked to school. What? Yeah, I walked to school. If I was lucky, and if it was ugly weather, my mother would pick me up for lunch, and she would pick me up after school. But getting to school, my mother, she was not in a big hurry to get out of that bed. She was very happy in that bed, and I walked to school. There was no such thing as school avoidance. Truancy, are you kidding me? If I was truant, you know what would have happened? Reform school. You and I heard an incredible list of things that would happen to us in reform school. Therefore, I was not a truant. And I didn't get to avoid because that wasn't an option. I had to walk through the thickles of Chuck Sapp. And I'm sure there were others that were ready to threaten me at any given time. I was not a jock. I was not even a disc jockey at that point. I wasn't a jock. It was all horrible. That's what I lived through in my childhood. What? No, that's pretty much my whole show. That's it. That's all I got. Walter M. Sterling, live. And the reason I do the show live is I want to talk to you. Things from your childhood that were constant threats. 855-839-1210. My 19-year-old revealed to us when she was 17 that she used to think that the hissing in the steam pipes in the house, she thought those were snakes. No, she really thought those were snakes. And Meredith, why didn't you bring any of this to us at the time? We could have settled that. We would have been happy to open a pipe for you and shown you that it was water. But when you were a kid, you and I made up stuff in our heads, and we often made up stuff that was just a total lie that we tell for God knows what reason. But there were probably things when you were a kid that were nasty and scary, other than your drunk uncle. I'd like to know what they were. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired Detective Vic Ferrari. And tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, find out how the NYPD plans to rid City Island of pirates. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
The FBI come a-calling. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Having your wife mad at you for something that happened in a dream? It's a real thing.
Look, it was just as real in that dream as it would have been if it happened. I'm mad. Sorry.
Coming up with Dan and Becky Gaffney here on Sterling every damn night.
Machete. Details later, the people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Good every damn night.
I was in middle school when I had my first bout with anxiety. It began when I struggled with the pressure of being on a sports team. Being constantly compared to others caused a pit in my stomach that kept rising. I was scared and uncomfortable. Soon my parents picked up on my anxiety and had me talk to a therapist. I'd walk into therapy and she would ask me, "How are you doing?" And I'd be like, "I'm great." Then a few days would pass and it would hit hard. I'd experience an anxiety attack while out with my family or in English class, and I didn't know what to do because I didn't have any guidance at that very moment. I could be completely still, and inside my body would be racing. The contradiction between being physically still and mentally speeding is terrifying. Dissolving the anxiety feels impossible. The spontaneous attacks are the worst of all because I'm blindsided and have little ability to recover. I feel separated from everyone. I can't speak. I can't listen. I can't focus.
I've never had that. Have you had that? Have you had anxiety attacks to that degree? I'll get nervous, but not crippling. And then I come to learn that it is a profound, growing challenge among especially young women today. And there's many theories about what this is about. Many different ways to cure it, from medication to hugs. But they're not really sure why it's increased in such a volume today. And part of it is COVID. This screwed up kids more than you and I will ever know. Because these clowns who didn't think we should send our kids into classrooms where there was almost like 0.1% incidence of COVID, which usually was a sniffle. Once you take a kid out of that cycle of education, the rhythm of a school year, the rhythm of summer vacation, Easter vacation, Christmas, you take them out of that rhythm, and all the education, all of the lessons are paced to a certain age and time and practiced over 100 years. They got that down. They know when the kid's supposed to learn reading. They know when it's supposed to. And now you've screwed up that cycle anywhere from a year to 18 months. Outside of Florida, screwed up. I had a 20-year-old, get this, it hit me in a uniquely profound, triumvirate way. My oldest daughter, it was her senior year. All of a sudden, she didn't get a senior year. And my daughter is a rules girl. She wanted prom. She wanted yearbook, graduation, ceremonies, senior homecoming. She wanted to drive around with stupid things written on her car. She wanted pictures in the yearbook. All right, none of that happened. That kid didn't get a prom. She was looking for a prom for years. She didn't get all of the ceremonies of being a public school senior class kid. You know how they took their pictures? Because they couldn't go into the school. This is an 800-kid school. The photographer came to each kid's house, and the kid had to be outside. The photographers couldn't go into the house. You listening to me? This is what COVID did in terms of screwing kids up. They didn't get the phenomena of going into an auditorium and being with all their peers, and everybody got their picture taken for the yearbook. No, that didn't happen. The photographer came around the neighborhood in a car, with a loud, wacky horn, to get the kid to come out of the house. I'm not making it up. And then the kid stood in the side in their driveway with a fake set, and the pictures were taken as if it isn't embarrassing enough when you're 17 to get your picture taken. Now they were standing out in their yard getting their picture taken after having been driven from their home by a wacky horn. That was just one little part of it. So she was totally denied all of the joy, socialization of being a senior in high school. So she didn't get that. My middle school kid had gone into 10th grade determined to be straight A's, and she was. And then COVID hit. They had to learn on Zoom. Well, teachers didn't have any experience teaching on Zoom. The kids had no experience learning on Zoom. No learning was done. My middle school kid went from straight A's to F's. She was about to be kept back. She was about to not graduate. She was about to screw up every single college application there was. Disaster. And then my precious 13-year-old, she was like 10 or 11, right? And she has some challenges, but she was doing good enough. You know, she was coming along. 18 months at home. Yeah, got that? You got a 9-year-old, 10-year-old at home for 18 months? She went from doing good enough for her to zero, minus zero. We've had to put her into a very special ed school in order for her to get back up to where she was 4 years ago. 18 months of no public school. And how much of our taxes go to public school? How much of our taxes, property taxes, go to public schools? Well, you and I should get a refund. Where's our 18-month refund for no services, no product, no deliveries? Nothing that we were paying those taxes for was delivered. Therefore, you and I should get a tax refund. Here's my number. Let's talk. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. It's a live radio show, Sterling, every damn Sunday.
I am the infamous host of Sterling every damn night.
Every damn night, every damn night.
Taking all your calls, whether you are wrong or right. Grumpy nighttime voice that's heard but never seen. Broadcasting from the laundry room and cleaning the lint screen.
I am
Walter Sterling and I'm on coast to coast.
Coast to coast to
Sterling every damn night.
Every damn night, every damn night.
Boom, boom, Hollywood, Sterling every damn night. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood from California. Welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday. To have a giant like you on the show is flattering and an honor. Mateus reviews movies, miniseries, all the things that are vaguely entertaining. And he's an established and an important critic in the land of critics. I, of course, don't read The New Yorker or listen to NPR, so I have no idea what he's talking about. But, Mateus, good evening. Welcome to the big show.
Good evening to you, Walter. It's a joy to be with you.
It is.
Every time I get a chance. I missed you last week.
Yes.
I'm so glad we're together this week. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. What's up?
Well, we've got some numbers coming in here. Would you believe that Taylor Swift, with her movie The Official Release Party of a Showgirl, has once again dominated the box office this weekend with $33 million since Friday. That's followed by the new Leonardo DiCaprio movie, One Battle After Another, which I thought was really great filmmaking, but I didn't like one single character in it. You can acknowledge a movie is well made and not like it, and that's how I feel about that. And the third place is The Smashing Machine, which is the movie I'd like to talk to you about tonight.
Yes, sir.
This is from A24. This is usually a studio that does really offbeat, strange films, so for them to have such a mainstream biopic is quite impressive, and it's really solid. It's about the mixed martial arts and UFC champion Mark Kerr, and he's played by Dwayne Johnson. Now, Kerr was an undefeated pioneer in the ring, and was unbeaten until an opioid addiction derailed him. Now, he's got a girl, of course. Everyone's got to have a girl in a movie. Emily Blunt plays that girl, the Don Staples, a real person, of course, who sticks with him through thick and thin as he rises to fame and later is smashed by his addiction. The story is written by Benny Safdie. And I have to say the glowing triumph here is the performance of Wayne Johnson, who offers Mark Kerr as an extremely polite and professional personality full of natural charisma. And, of course, the makeup people, they may get nominated for an Oscar because they really transformed The Rock and made him look like Mark Kerr. I mean, there was, of course, a hair appliance. He was wearing hair and maybe built up his neck a little bit more, if you can imagine. The Rock is probably one of the most built guys out there on the screen or off. But really, he was quite believable as this character. So I was really surprised throughout. Excellent production values, and I think that both Johnson and the makeup may get a nomination. Emily Blunt, I think, is consistently great. She's been, of course, nominated for an Oscar in the past. She's worked with Dwayne Johnson before in the Disney animated, not animated, but the Disney family film Jungle Cruise, so they've got a chemistry that's working already, and they play off each other really great. So that's The Smashing Machine, and I think it's pretty solid movie making.
What is the story?
Well, the story is this guy who is trying to get into these various different boxing events, and he's been undefeated. So you follow how he follows this trajectory. He can't accept. He can't accept that he could ever lose until some steroids he starts taking for some difficulties that he's having become particularly helpful to his fighting and eventually derail him. So once he's faced with the impossible, what, I lost? I can't believe I lost. And he then has to realize he's got a problem. And so with the support of his girlfriend, who takes a bit of abuse and still rides through that, she sets him on the straight and narrow, and he, you know, turns it around and has a good life. It's a very positive story.
And Johnson wears a hair appliance, is that what you said?
Yes, that's right. I don't mean like a toupee, you know, it's not like a hairpiece. I mean, it's obviously makeup and hair, but they had to reshape his head a little bit because he has a very pointy head, very round, famously bald head, probably the most famous bald head since Telly Savalas. And, you know, they had to do quite a number on him. But, you know, you can almost tell it's him there because of just his overall dimension. But they did a lot of prosthetic work with the face, too, to give it the character to look like the real Mark Kerr, a real-life USC fighter who went through these very challenges.
Mateus Boom Boom in Hollywood, do you wear a hair appliance?
No, I'm just balding. The hair started to leave in my 20s, and I've come back. But this is the way I came into the world. Well, not came into the world, but this is the way I'm existing. And I'm just going to keep it like that. I've never been very vain. I mean, I may like to dress nicely, a little fastidious about my clothes, but the rest of me just falls apart as nature intended. And, that's just the way it's supposed to be.
I've seen your three-piece suits. Where do you get them?
I have a tailor. I have a tailor that, you know, because I have a triangular shape. You know, I'm pear-shaped, so you can't buy off the roof. And since I'd never met a meal I didn't like and have to push the table away, it's hard to push the table away, I actually have to have my shirts made by a tailor. So I have a tailor that used to be a Savile Row guy, and then he came to the United States, and he's made, you know, just the basic staples, a couple of blazers and some very nice custom shirts, and that's how I'm able to, you know, appear in public without offending people.
Do you get your custom shirts monogrammed?
No, I had to be a little bit showy. I think I prefer to be a little more understated.
Even on the cuff?
Yeah, no, not even on the cuff. I do generally have like a French cuff. Rounded is my favorite preference, rounded French cuff. But I don't have any monograms there. I figure anything that draws attention to itself is not serving the whole ensemble.
You know who else said that? Robert.
I have no idea.
No, two people said it. Robert Evans said that. The great film producer who produced Goodbye Columbus and Chinatown. And he wrote an autobiography that you've got to hear as an audiobook. He read the audiobook and it's hysterical. And he went to a Hollywood affair, and he was dressed in a suit and tie. And two people came up to him and asked, "Where did you get that tie? That's such a beautiful tie." And the minute he got home, he threw the tie away because the tie got more attention than he did.
Yeah.
Right. So that proves your point. The other thing is, when I was rich, I would be in London, and I'd get my shirts at Turnbull and Asser's, which was a notorious shirt shop. And and I was new at the custom age, the custom shirt game. And but I saw that they had many monograms. You could get monograms. And I said to the guy who was fitting me and selling me this, who had been there 100 years, I said, "So I want a monogram. I want it here." And he says, "No." I wanted it on the cuff. And he just said, "No." He just was appalled that they even sold monograms, and he certainly wasn't going to sell one to me. How do we find you online, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood? How do we find you online?
On Facebook, it's Mateus Boom Balls Hollywood. That's MATIASBOMBAL, apostrophe S, Hollywood like the sound. On Facebook, that's Mateus Boom Balls Hollywood.
And Mateus has a special gift in his reviews that whenever there's significant nudity, he will tell us about it. And that is
why
he is here several times a week. Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, thank you for being on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired detective Vic Ferrari. And tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective. Find out how the NYPD plans to rid City Island of pirates. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
The FBI come a-calling. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Having your wife mad at you for something that happened in a dream? It's a real thing.
Look, it was just as real in that dream as it would have been if it happened. I'm mad. Sorry.
Coming up with Dan and Becky Gaffney here on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Machete. Details later, the people of Walmart. Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Lesbians in space.
A lot of friends that are like in their 30s that come up to me and they're like, "Oh, I think I'm a lesbian now. I think I'm a lesbian." It's like you had a lemon drop shot and you kissed your friend. That is not a lesbian.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night. It's Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you about life in our old house with our 8 kids. Nothing about the kids or the house today. But I woke up to the fact that my wife is mad at me for something that happened in a dream. I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
Okay, yeah, you are laughing, and you were laughing in the dream, which is partially why I was angry with you when I woke up. I'm telling you, it's a thing. If you're married and your wife has any kind of dream where you do something as stupid as my husband did in the dream that I had last night, she's going to be mad at you. And it's a real thing. It's like I am physiologically affected and therefore psychologically react.
Right.
To what he does in my dreams.
And my job today has been trying not to laugh.
Okay.
Because it's hilarious. I did nothing. This is all.
You did. You did.
All just, in your mind.
Yes, but still you did it. In my mind, you did it. And so, of course, then I'm like reading about how women are more affected by dreams. Men have nightmares about catastrophic things happening, and women have nightmares about relationships,
but
and they get mad.
But it had nothing to do with me.
Yeah, well, it did. In my dream, it did. So, again, I'm reading that it's probably some underlying thing that I have with you or something that you've done to tick me off that's manifesting in the dream.
Wow.
And it, I mean, it causes your heart rate to rise. You get anxiety. You can get all kinds of distress disorders from, or your dreams can be affected from anxiety and distress disorders. So obviously I'm stressed about you and that made me mad. And in the dream, I was trying to come to you with this issue that was a major, horrible thing that you did, and you were laughing.
In the dream.
But you were laughing in the dream. So every time you laugh that I'm mad about you, what happened in my dream,
right?
I get more upset.
I can't laugh in real life.
No, you can't.
Because it reminds you of,
yep,
of the dream.
It does.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to hold back a laugh right now.
Seriously, though.
I'm trying to hold back a laugh. Because it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but you can't help it. If you are a woman and this happens to you, you are normal. And I used to think I was the only crazy person that this happened to. But then you start seeing memes and reels where, you know, a guy is saying, I'm being punished today because of what I did to my wife in my dream last night. It really does. Like, right, you know, your heart rate rises. You get stressed, probably have a cortisol spike or 17. And then it happens throughout the day when you think of it and you get a little salty.
So the solution is I have to buy you gifts and things,
we
right?
We went to the antique store and got a little ring. We're going to get some ice cream, maybe have a couple of drinks.
Right.
You're going to be really nice to me. And if I punch you when you laugh, you're going to have to forgive me.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky Sterling every damn night.
It's about 55 minutes past the hour. Walter M. Sterling, Mark Simone, an avid listener and brilliant broadcaster and good guy. Mark Simone, America's bon vivant. Here's this guy who does 10 to noon on a radio station in New York City, a station that should carry this show. And if they did, then I would say they're callers. Because there's nothing on. Hey, guys, whatever you got on now is crap. So let's just be clear about that. Mark Simone, who's on from 10 to noon on this big station in New York, he has the life that I want. He's zealot. This guy goes to every opening, every dinner, every lunch. You think, oh, there's a lunch. He's at this lunch today. And then you go to the next slide, and there he is at a different lunch on the same day. And he's always with really famous people like Judge Jeanine Pirro. He hangs out with, if he ever got a ticket, he'd go to Judge Jeanine and ask her what to do, and she wouldn't charge him anything. That's the life I want. And he's a good guy. Rebecca Canner, welcome. Sterling every damn Sunday. Beryl Krevitz, welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday. The legendary Phil Zachary at WGAN in Maine, welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday. James Copeland, one of our many voice talent, one of our many voice actors. Yes, this is a well-cast show, not like big conglomerate shows. This show, I have like 30 people working on this show, and yet it sounds like crap every time I talk. Michael Ewing in Sebring, Florida. Boy, do I love your weather. And Neil Paul and Judy Paul, they went to a great wedding yesterday. It was the wedding of Judy's kid. Judy's son had a wedding yesterday. I will get details and share that with you. But these are our great friends. These are hardcore Midnight Misfits. And I do this show, first of all, to talk to you at 855-839-1210. And our topic tonight is things that used to scare the crap out of you when you were a kid. Things that really scared you when you were a kid that you dreaded. I dreaded Chuck Sapp, who lived up the street, because he was going to make fun of me. He never hit me or anything, but he was going to make fun of me if I ran into him on the way to school. And the dentist, I had 7 dreadful Mondays in a row. Every Monday after school, I had catechism. That's enough for any kid to dread and feel horror about. That was followed by a trip to the dentist, because what the dentist did when he realized I had 7 cavities, he was going to fill one a week, because there's no way I was going to put up with 2 in any given week. He tried once, and I stopped him. I tried once, and I stopped him. Things that scared the crap out of you when you were a kid. 855-839-1210. Sterling every damn Sunday.
years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
And I'm asking you for privacy during this difficult period.
Here's a story about Sydney Sweeney, who looks hot in an ad for some jeans. But then the usual suspects started complaining about what the ad actually means. They said it promotes white supremacy because Sydney was talking about her DNA. But all the normal people wished these pink-haired freaks would just all go away. Now American Eagle stock is soaring, and Dunkin' Donuts.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, J.B. Bakery, Salida and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
Well, there's Selena and Steve and Father Drucker, who are going to politely wait until I'm done talking to Jack from California about things that terrified him as a kid. Hi, Jack in California. Welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hi.
Hey.
So I lived in Florida, and we went to the Ripley's Believe It or Not. I think it was in St. Augustine. I was only 7, so I don't really know where it was. And we were wandering through, and I saw the Iron Maiden. And I don't know if you know what an Iron Maiden is.
Oh, yes. I studied about Iraq. I do know.
So, and when I realized that that spike was going to go right through their skull,
yeah,
I was just terrified. And I had nightmares about that for years.
Yes.
I think I was probably 12 or 13 before I finally did not have nightmares about the Iron Maiden. You shouldn't show a kid with a really vivid imagination torture instruments. It's a bad move.
How old were you when you saw the Iron Maiden in that museum? How old were you?
Between 6 and 7. Maybe
yeah.
8, but I think I was probably middle 7, like 7 years and 4 months or something.
There's no way for a kid who's 6 or 7 to contextualize something that horrendous and that outside the realm of their personal experience, thank God. That's a good one to get scared about, Jack. Thank you very much for calling, 855-839-1210. You and I are doing therapy. We're confessing what scared the hell of us when we were kids, what really scared us when we were kids. 855-839-1210, Father Jim Drucker, J.B. Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey, with Steve the Baker and Selena the Ballerina, who is a pageant girl, and therefore pageant girls, well, they are scary and they know secret things. Selena, when you were a kid, can you think of something top of mind that scared you, that really scared you, that you look back on it now and go, you know, what was I afraid of there?
Well, other than the Eagles losing, that's my number one fear.
Well, that was a
Judy Bakery this week.
Wait. That the Eagles didn't lose. The ref screwed up.
Exactly. That's what I said. Exactly.
Yes.
Well, other than that, I actually had this. I guess everyone told me it was made up. So I think because everyone was telling me it was fake, I ended up calling it fake. But I had this character that I insisted was shaped like a bean and lived under my bed and was called Fake, and he was coming to get me.
Whoa.
With his little minions.
Whoa. Wow.
Was anybody talking to you, Father Drucker? I'm listening to Selena.
No, I'm just going, oh, wow, I got frightened listening to it.
Yeah. Now, how long did that go on, Selena?
You know, I think it was a good few years, probably from the ages of, like, maybe 1 to 2 or 3, where I was really thinking about him a lot. And then, you know, until I was about 6 or 7, I think he came up every once in a while. I'd think about him again and then get nervous. But Yeah, everyone told me he was fake, so his name became fake.
And then when he went away, was there an event that made him go away, or was just time?
I don't really remember. I think it was just time and reassurance from my parents and the fact that he never actually did come to get me. So maybe I just realized, well, he's kind of lazy if he is coming for me. So maybe I've got an advantage.
The trouble under the bed. Millions of kids have trouble with whatever is under the bed. Stephen the baker, what were you afraid of, really afraid of, when you were a kid?
So my mom made dinners at home, and I was really afraid when we didn't have dessert after dinner. And like, she would tell us the whole time to like behave ourselves. I had a brother and a sister, and we would sit there, we were young kids, and she'd be like, "You're not gonna get dessert if you don't behave yourself." So like, a lot of times we just like never got dessert, and I kind of called on that it was only because she didn't actually have dessert.
Yeah.
So yeah, we didn't have dessert, so I kind of figured things out later on that I should just start making dessert so I would get dessert. And that's how, my depravity of not having dessert, fueled the fire for being a baker.
Yeah, what I'm afraid of right now, Stephen, is you keep moving the phone. You can't keep moving the phone. You have to keep it at the same spot. Father Jim Drucker, even though you found God and salvation at Warm and then later as a priest, did you have something you were afraid of, Father Drucker, when you were a kid?
Walter, I have to tell you that you're brilliant and you're perceptive. You're so deeply perceptive. Mm. Yes, when I was young, I would see The Invisible Man, fantastic movies, and Frankenstein and the Mummy. And I grew up in the poor section of the streets of Philadelphia, and I would come home and pull the blankets up, thinking that's going to protect me from Frankenstein or the werewolf or the mummy or the Invisible Man.
How long did that go on, do you think?
Well, that's why I'm saying you're so perceptive. I think it just went away, I guess, as I got older. I guess maybe I realized that they're not as bad as I thought they were.
Did any of you see the movie Invaders from Mars when you were a kid?
Absolutely.
It was in black and white, and it was terrifying because it was shot in the 50s. It was about a kid, a 9-10-year-old kid, who looked out his window and he saw a spaceship landing on a ridge over there. And then a few minutes later, he went outside and he started walking around, and the sand was eating people up. The sand was sucking people into the ground. And at one point, it sucked him into his ground. And when it caught something like a spider, it caught them and froze them into the wall. These people were frozen into the wall. It looked like ice, but they were frozen, including his parents. And then he got out of there, and he ran to the police station. Remember, in the 50s, and it was a big, cartoonish-type police station. And no one would believe him. The cops wouldn't believe him. The authorities wouldn't believe him. That haunted me for months and months. Well, how about you? 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Something that scared the hell out of you when you were a kid. Now, at JB Bakery, there's nothing terrifying there. Good week at JB Bakery, Selena, Steve, Father Drucker, was it a good week?
It was a great week.
The pumpkin.
Say it again.
Go ahead, Steve.
So I'm doing the pumpkin cheesecake donuts, and they're really taking off right now. It's a popular donut with cheesecake filling, actually like pumpkin cheesecake in the middle, and it has a caramel top, and I put a pie crust crumble on top. So that's an item that's really going well at JB Bakery.
Now, everything, according to Steve, goes well. Selena, is that really going well at JB Bakery?
I have to say, it's definitely going well. I can back that one up. I think it's delicious. Might be my favorite donut that we make all year. But we also make a pumpkin cream donut, which is just the pumpkin, like a pumpkin pie filling mixed with the cream, just like a regular white powder cream. But I have to say, adding in that cream cheese or the cheesecake filling and mixing that in with the pumpkin just takes it to the next level. It's absolutely fantastic.
You have a recipe for us today, Steve, a recipe that we can share with the Midnight Misfits?
Yeah, I do, Walter. So this time of year, it's fall. It's like crisp. The weather is, well, right now it's warm, but it should be getting cooler pretty soon. So a lot of time you see walking through the supermarket, you see those old-fashioned spiced wafer cookies, the famous box. It's orange. You see those in the supermarket. So I have a recipe for the bakers at home, the Midnight Misfit bakers, to make this cookie just like the one in the supermarket. This one, I just recommend using a high-quality molasses, really dark molasses, one that doesn't have a lot of sugar in it. This way, it brings out the flavor of the spices, which are cloves, cinnamon, ginger, cardamom, that kind of stuff.
All right, that's too confusing. No, stop, stop. This is what you do every time. This is why I've had to suspend you. We don't want the recipe right now or the list of ingredients. Just tell me what it's called and that we can get it from you. So what's the name of this recipe?
It's a spiced wafer cookie. This is the cookie that is used for dipping in milk. This
perfect.
Is next to the perfect. Chocolate chip. But this is the one.
Perfect. All right, so we will make that available. All you have to do is send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com, waltermsterling@gmail.com, and I'll send you this amazing cookie recipe. Father Drucker, do you have thoughts for us on this Sunday night?
Just remember, today for us Christians and Catholics is the day of the Lord, the day he resurrected. In the Eastern Church, we actually call it Voskresenia Dein. So may God bless us for our Lord, and you have a good show, and may God bless our audience, Walter.
Amen. Steve, Selena, JB Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey, if you go there and you say you're a Midnight Misfit, you will get a free donut. Don't be stupid. Go there. And Father Jim Drucker, who didn't turn off their computer, and Father Jim Drucker, thank you for being on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sometimes it's nice to hear an old guy complaining on the radio.
Sterling every damn night, every damn night.
24 past the hour as we drive across the country on I-80, 18-wheelers. This is your special time because it's just you and me. No one's going to bother us. We'll get to that love truck stop. We will eat whatever we want to eat. We will get dumb things we don't need for the cab and be happy. Because drivers of 18-wheelers are the kings of our country. Nothing would happen in this country without the 18-wheelers. They keep us safe. They keep us stocked. They keep us secure. They are the best. And then they have to put up with you and me in four-wheelers. And that's never a pretty relationship at all. But congratulations. If you're a truck driver, if you've got that license, I respect you, sir. I respect you, ma'am. This is an important, vital job. And heck, getting that license, driving that 18-wheeler through the cones, backing it up to a dock. Oh, my God. Respect. What scared you when you were a kid? Maybe forgot about it. I'm reminding you. I want to trigger you. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Invaders from Mars. Or was it Invasion from Mars? A 1950s movie. I saw it, obviously, years after the fact. It was in black and white. Simple production. Terrifying. Because it hit on the two things that a 9 or 10-year-old would be truly scared of. The Martians took the kid's parents. We saw this kid looking out the window, and he saw a flying saucer land on a ridge over there, and it was a flying saucer. And he went outside to explore it, and he realized that he was being sucked into the sand. That special effect alone was terrifying. Then when he gets down there, he sees that under the sand have been hollowed out tunnels. It isn't dirt under there, it's tunnels that the Martians have hollowed out, and that's where they take their captives, which included his parents. Now he finally gets away. He runs to the police station to tell them that his parents have been taken. His parents have been taken by Martians, and the police don't believe him. They're behind this big sergeant's desk, way, you know, 20 feet up in the air. They're looking down on him. They don't believe him. Finally, he wakes up from the dream. But then it gets really scary. You've got to see this invasion from Mars, invaders from Mars. Oh, my God. Then the other movie that scared the hell out of me was a movie that Disney produced and they have made disappear. You're not going to find this movie. It's the Disney version of Tom Thumb, which I think, again, came out in the 50s. It was in color, and it was a Disney version of Tom Thumb. And Tom Thumb had normal parents. I'm sorry to call them normal, but that's what they were. Tom was a little person, but he had normal-sized parents, but they felt the community felt that because he had given birth or had this little miniature kid, that his parents were devils. And we see a scene where his parents, remember, this is about parental separation. These are the greatest fears of any kid, right? Your kid, terrifying to be taken away from a parent. Couldn't be anything more scary. We see that his parents were taken from him and made powerless because they were tied up into the community square and flogged. Tom Thumb had to watch his parents being flogged. All right. Between the little people references and a terrifying image of separation from parents, I have never seen that movie anywhere with any Disney anything. That just disappeared. You don't see that on Disney Plus. That's not showing up on Disney Plus. Parents being flogged. Bad plan. And what else terrified me? Well, then I had bullies, you know. I had bullies. I had Chuck Sapp, who lived up the street. I used to time my departure from the house so that I would not have to see Chuck Sapp. I would not have to be near him. And again, did he hit me or anything? No, he just made fun of me, constantly made fun of me. He was a really angry kid. Probably his father was not a wonderful guy or his mother or something. None of my business. I didn't care. I was, in general, I was very happy at home. Like if the first time I heard the Beach Boys song In My Room, I thought that was a happy song. It's a tragedy. But I thought In My Room by the Beach Boys was a happy song. That was my goal, to be in my room. Trouble came when I left the house. That's when I wasn't nearly as happy. Couldn't wait to get home. Pretty much the way it is now. I was always an introvert because I'm a misfit. How about you? 11:36 on the East Coast, 8:36 on the West Coast with Walter M. Sterling. Good evening, Alicia. Welcome to 855-839-1210. Hi. What scared the crap out of you when you were a kid?
It was a trip to Seven Falls in Colorado. I was 5 years old. And I have no idea why it terrified me so, because I was raised on a farm, and we were never taught fear. You know, we used the outhouse in the middle of the night and went in the dark, and the only sound you would hear is my grandfather cocking the rifle. Well, later I learned it was because of a possible coyote that would maybe nab us as we went to the potty. So I was a fearless little gal. But when we went to Seven Falls, Colorado, I was five, and my mom was holding my arm between the elbow and the shoulder for a good grip because we were going up these wooden steps, and the Seven Falls were vibrating the steps that went clear up this 150-foot waterfall. And the steps were empty underneath. Like, as a child, I could have fallen between the steps.
Right.
They were sort of a high step. And I had to look down. I couldn't see the waterfall. I could hear the noise. And we were up about 30 steps, and I saw this turquoise shoe the size of my own foot, and it was on the rock. And I let out this blood-curdling scream and cried the rest of the way up that stairwell all the way up to the falls. And that has stayed with me to the point I shared that story with my sister now, and we're in our 70s. She remembers seeing the shoe as well. But for a fearless young girl, that terrified me, and I have been afraid of heights ever since.
It only takes one traumatic event like that to make you afraid of something like heights or closed in spaces forever under all things. Was it that there was a big distance for a kid between each step, or was it just the looking down and seeing what was there?
All of it.
Got it.
All of it. And the rock. I remember the rock to this day. It was a bulging rock. It was a big rock. And it was so wet and shiny, and the water was flowing rapidly. And I think the noise didn't help.
Right.
But there was no consolation or encouragement. My poor mother was a very delicately built woman, and she was little. So it's all she could do was to drag me up the steps that was basically 150 feet straight up in the air, and that had to be hard on her. My dad was carrying my sister, and he was strong, and he was carrying her, but my mom had to literally hold on to me and pull me up. And so it was worse for her, too, as a ladder. It was like a ladder, and
well,
she was holding on to this railing,
right.
And it was very old and wet.
So it was wet, old, creaky, like your husband.
Noisy. And then I saw the shoe. And I thought, oh, my God, someone has fallen through and lost their shoe.
Alyssa,
thank you.
And
I was little, and shoe would have fit me. That shoe would have fit me.
Terrifying. That is terrifying. Thank you very much for calling with the things that scared you when you were a kid. And we get to get it out now. The things that scared me when I was a kid was Invasion from Mars, that movie, the Tom Thumb movie, terrifying. But Alyssa just mentioned about heights. When I was a teenager, I went to Barnicot Light. And you could climb up the lighthouse at Barnicot Light in New Jersey on Long Beach Island, end of Long Beach Island. I could climb up that. And I had no fear of heights. And also, I'd never been up that high without a guardrail. And that's what I learned. I get up to the top of Barnicot Light, and you can walk around the edge. They have a ramp, a walkway around the edge. And I thought, well, that'll be cool. And I took one step out, and there were people behind me. Therefore, it was not easy to go back. I kind of had to walk around it, and it was below my knee. That was the key. When I have a guardrail that's below my knee and there's a height involved, I'll be terrified. If I'm enclosed, I can be in a floor-to-ceiling windowed room, and I'm not going to be afraid of the heights. I'm in an airplane, not afraid of the heights. But if I'm not fully enclosed, oh, my God. And the same thing if I'm in a car. That San Diego Del Coronado Bridge, it has a guardrail that's only like 2.5 feet high. And it has a curve, and it's high. Terrifying. That just I've never been so scared on a bridge before or since than the Del Coronado Bridge. Things that terrified you as a kid. My number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. And you notice that there's a lot of trouble at the public radio stations, and I feel so much sympathy for them. Not at all. They're whining about losing 10 to 15% of their funding. That's what they're whining about at those public radio stations. And you're thinking, oh, it's terrible. They're going to have to lay off all these people. I promise you, they are overstaffed. The station you're listening to right now, here, I'll give you an example of proper staffing. The station you're listening to, Sterling, every damn Sunday, on right now, you hear my voice? I'll bet you there's one person in the building. Probably not running this control board on this show. That's probably handled by a computer. There's probably one person, like, walking around. If they have a news department, there's one person in the news department. And most stations don't have a news department. Oh, you didn't know that? I was on a big L.A. station a couple weeks ago. There was some Los Angeles news story. And I called them up. And I said, I need information on this story. I wanted to talk about it on this show. And I call up this L.A. radio station where I am known and liked, and I like them. And it's very rare for me to say I'm known and liked at a radio station, but I'm known and liked at this station. I call them up, and they say, oh, yeah, sure, we've got someone covering that story. We'll be happy to put them on the air with you. Okay, great. This guy goes on the air with me. I'm talking about an L.A. story. I'm talking about this network radio show, right? Listen to this, Sean. 2 days later, I find out that that guy who is hosting a radio show in Los Angeles, and I'm presenting him as hosting a radio show in Los Angeles, Mark Simone, listen to this, was in fact in Denver or Phoenix, but he wasn't in L.A. It was Denver, Phoenix, or one of those sun-drenched markets that's sort of medium-sized and nobody's really ambitious. That's what I said. They weren't in L.A. That radio station, it was in the afternoon. It was in day. No, there was nobody in the station. I was talking to Denver or Phoenix, thinking I was talking to somebody at a Los Angeles radio station. When you listen to the radio right now, especially right now, there's nobody in the station. But my point is that there doesn't always need to be. You can run a radio station with a woman, a guy, at any given time. Technology has devolved to the point where humans are minor. People are whining about AI, might be taking away their jobs. Hell, this happened in radio 35 years ago. No need to. Mr. Schaefer took it away 35 years ago. And if a public station is whining about losing 10 to 15% of their revenue, having to lay people off, and, oh, my God, having to cancel those shows that they buy from Minnesota. Well, that tells me all they really have to do is if they have a donor, a listener donor, a listener sponsor that donates $100 a year to them, they just need to ask their listener sponsors for $110 a year. Just give us $10 more a year, and then none of your friends here will be fired. That's all they have to do. It's not a catastrophic situation. They could also use a different CEO. God, she was a disaster. All right, those are my big speeches for tonight. What terrified you as a kid? I want to know what scared the crap out of you as a kid that you hang on to. Or when I triggered you just now, you went, whoa, I had hoped I had forgotten about that. Here's my phone number. Let's talk about it. It's a live radio show. Yeah, no, this is a live radio show. My number is 855-839-1210. Sean will answer the phone. He'll be pleasant to you. Let's give Sean a lot to do. 855-839-1210 with Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday.
May I introduce to you a feller named Hobart Roop. Hobart Roop. He was the head of the Liquor Commission in a place called Nebraska. He was in charge of keeping those liquor licenses going. And he made a new friend, a wonderful friend who owned a couple of exotic dancing places. Yeah, this goes to corruption because the FBI was called co-conspirator. And generally, you don't think of strip club owners being named Brent, but here we are. His name is Brent. All right, Brent Zywick is the owner, co-owner of The Office, Gentlemen's Club, and the Night Before Lounge in Lincoln. Apparently, according to the FBI, so I take that as pretty legit, they say that Mr. Roop used his position to get cash, free entry to strip clubs, and he received, shall we say, champagne room type of favors. Favors. Yeah, so that happened. He's been arrested. Roop resigned when he found out he was under investigation. That was this past May. And he's going to be doing some time in jail if convicted. The corruption at least cost one business owner, a rival jiggle joint runner, $65K. One business owner was extorted for that amount in order to retain a liquor license that otherwise would not have qualified for. Nebraska Attorney General Mike Hilgers from the Hilger family. He basically said this: Nebraskans, and I'd say all Americans, expect their public service to give them honest services, that they act with integrity and follow the oath of office that they swear to uphold. Unfortunately, that's not what happened here. Tough to pass up on pretty girls, cash money, probably a free drink or two. Seems like a winner to me. But the long arm of the law doesn't think that way. Hobart Roop, we'll miss you. Enjoy your time in jail. Don't drop the soap. From the Champagne Room, I'm Velo Hool. Strippers on the Loose, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Oh, yeah!
Oh, my God, look at this. It's a live radio show on a Sunday night. There is no such a thing. This was banned by FCC law 25, 30 years ago. You haven't heard a live radio show on a Sunday night since then, but yet here I am with Phil Zachary at WGAN and Michael Ewing in Sebring, Florida, and Paul Vandenberg in Albany, New York. Paul, you know, I know you do mornings and you own the station. I'll fill in for you on your morning show. If you ever get in a jam or you're tired or you have the flu, I'll do that for you. I can say, you know, wacky things. Patty in Maine, welcome to Sterling every damn night at 855-839-1210. What are you afraid of from childhood?
Well, first of all, thank you for taking my call. I love your show. And what I'm afraid of from childhood is my mother took me to see the movie King Kong. And when he attacked the elevated train, I still to this day have a fear of getting underneath, walking underneath an elevated train line or under bridges. I do not like them at all. I avoid any route. Oh, I must have been about 8, 9 years old.
And
the movie theater... The movie theater was right next to the elevated train line.
Have you confronted your mother about this poor choice of hers?
Oh, my mother's deceased now. Yeah, she knew it, though. She knew it after, you know, we went and everything.
Right.
I said, I don't want to go that route. Don't go under the bridge. Don't go.
Of course, now you realize, Patty, that you're right to walk, to be afraid to walk under elevated trains. It's actually a good decision on your part. I appreciate that, and it's good therapy for us. Thanks very much.
I have one quick question.
Yes, Patty.
Did you ever find your cat?
Oh, yes.
Did he ever come home?
Yes. I should have told that story many times, because but I did mention it. Here's what happened. When I got off the air that night, I went into the backyard, and it was dead silent out. And I had gotten advice from you, my misfit, to just speak quietly. Because if you shout the cat's name, the cat will think you're mad at it.
That's
it
right.
Isn't, right? They'll just think you're mad.
Yep.
That's all they've known, is if you shout their name that you're mad at them. So I
right.
went out and I just spoke in a normal voice. And I start to hear, meow, meow, meow. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I go around to the side of the house you don't go to. You have two sides to your house. One side you don't go to. I go to the side of the house you don't go to, and there's a well, you know, a 2 or 3 foot well in front of one of the basement windows. Sinks down in front of one of the basement windows. There was a piece of plexiglass over that well. And somehow the cat got down into that well but couldn't get back up. So she had walked to the side of the house. She was exactly 20 feet away from the door. We were panicking over a cat that was 20 feet away from the door. And there she was. It had been a terrible thunderstorm that day. She was dry as could be. She was under the plexiglass. She was safe. She was fine. And it enabled my 13-year-old to actually get to sleep and not be sad. I appreciate the question, Patty. Thank you very much for the question. And thank you for listening to Sterling every damn night. 855-839-1210. Things you were afraid of as a child that even in the light of adulthood, you're still afraid of, but a little embarrassed about. 855-839-1210. Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday. Every damn Sunday, I'm here from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern. It's the only live radio show that you'd actually listen to for more than 3 or 4 minutes. KMBZ, run by Alan First, legendary programmer. So good, I don't know why you're in Kansas City, Alan First. But I'm glad you're at KMBZ, and so is Dan in Kansas City. Welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday, Dan.
Hello, Walter.
Dan, good to talk to you.
I have an event that happened to me when I was a child. I was probably 8 or 10 years old, and I was playing with my Hot Wheels out on the front porch, and we had a brick wall that came up and stopped halfway up or so, or as a child, it was about eye level to me. And so along the top of that brick, I could run my Hot Wheels like a little highway. So I'm driving along the highway, and suddenly I stop because there is a spider sitting there.
No.
Right there at eye level. And I just kind of froze, and he jumped onto my shoulder.
Oh.
I jumped into the front yard and just rolled and batting my hair and my shirt and rolling and screaming, and I never found the spider, and that was half the problem. I don't know where it was.
But Dan, the spider...
ever since then,
yes,
I will not put myself in a position for a jumping spider if I can help it, that's for sure.
Dan, the spider found you. How old were you when this happened?
I was about 8 or 10, somewhere around in there.
See, and these things aren't instantly forgotten. They live with us forever.
No,
Dan, thank
you. Not so deeply ingrained like PTSD, but oh my goodness. I view spiders a little bit differently than most people probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you listening. Thank you very much for listening to Sterling every damn Sunday. Dave Scott, good evening, sir.
Number one, it is great to be back with you in the Midnight Misfits. Each and every damn night here. How are you?
Well, Dave, always energized by talking to someone from Canada. Dave Scott is a Canadian radio star. He speaks about all things metaphysical, UFOs, portals, giants, Bigfoots. Dave Scott, he does a show called Spaced Out Radio. You can find it on YouTube, Spaced Out Radio, on a website, spacedoutradio.com. How am I? Well, Dave, I have 3 teenage daughters, and therefore I have no opinion about how I am. My job is to carry the water for them. Whatever, however they are, that's how I am. And every morning they wake up, they give me a list of demands, and I need to carry out those demands or there's trouble. And it seems, Dave, that most of their demands can only be met at the Apple store. Only at the Apple store do they find true happiness and Trader Joe's yogurt. Those are the two things.
I'm always wondering, you know, as a dad, how much money do I carry in my wallet just in case I have to hand out a $20 bill or two?
The answer is more.
How much as a man should I be carrying in my wallet at all times? $100, $200?
Well, there's a trick there. $100, but it needs to be in small bills.
Right.
Because if they say, I need $5, Dad, and you only got a 20, you're going to give them the 20, and they will make it disappear.
You know, here, my son is a little bit different, okay? The other day, I saw my son's wallet on the counter, and he's only 12. And I opened it up to see if he had any cash in there, because he had went to Grandpa's, and Grandpa takes him shopping and spoils him, but he was broke. So I slipped $25 in there, and I checked it the other day, and it's still there.
Wow. Wow, yeah. Did they actually not go anywhere?
Well, Grandpa lives out of town, so when he's with Grandpa, Grandpa usually opens up his wallet, doesn't let the boy pay. But, you know, this time around, I mean, he hasn't really been on a vacation or getaway with Grandpa for a while. So he hasn't taken his wallet anywhere. But, yeah, there's still money in his wallet.
Wow. Dave, what do you have to report from space?
Well, we're not going to space. We're going into history. Can we go back in time?
Whatever you want, Dave. You're the star.
Well, we're going to talk about a character that was actually alive during the Wild Wild West, called the Kentucky Cannibal. Now, believe it or not, a gentleman named Levi Boone Helm, otherwise known as the Kentucky Cannibal, for murdering people and then eating their bodies along the way, was born in 1828 in the state of Kentucky, and he traveled all around robbing people and murdering people across the Midwest and onto the West Coast. And believe it or not, when the Gold Rush Trail started in Nevada and made its way through British Columbia, he is also well known for many murders north of me in a place called Quesnel Forks, where he would rob miners and prospectors coming back from the Gold Rush. He'd wait and hide with them and wait to see where they were going or where they would stash their gold in order to go into town to grab a beer or a place to nap or sleep or maybe buy something for the horse. And he did this numerous times until he was eventually brought back or moved back into the United States and was killed by several men in 1858 or 1859 in Oregon. Now, this gentleman, the reason why we bring him up here, called the Kentucky Cannibal, is his ghost is still said to haunt this little town, ghost town, of Quesnel Forks. There are still many buildings there. All of them are abandoned. There's no doors on the buildings. There is no windows inside of these many buildings that are houses and former stores and horse barns and everything like that. But people still claim that they still see the Kentucky Cannibal walking around this town looking for his next victim.
Whoa. And when was the first victim? What year was the first victim killed?
Well, he started killing early after he grew into a teenager back in his days in Kentucky, and then made his way over to Missouri, eventually making his way across country to California to the gold fields, accompanied by his neighbor and friend, who basically learned that during a drinking session that the Kentucky Cannibal was indeed very murderous, before stabbing him with a Bowie knife, killing him instantly. So all of this kept on going until 1858, 1859, when he was eventually believed to have died. But apparently, that's when he made his way north to Canada, okay? And he was arrested in Canada in the Fraser Canyon in a town called Yale, where Yale, believe it or not, I've actually had a weird Sasquatch experience there. And that's where he was arrested, put on $90 security bonds. So you could imagine in 1862 how expensive $90 was for a bond.
Right.
Yeah. He was eventually jailed with many others and died by hanging January 14th, 1864. So I got the date of his death wrong by a couple of years there. I apologize. But his ghost is still said to haunt the northern part of the Gold Rush Trail, looking for gold.
Where is the Gold Rush Trail? Where is the Gold Rush Trail?
Oh, the Gold Rush Trail is long. Believe it or not, it is a couple thousand miles long, Walter. Now, the Gold Rush Trail starts in Virginia City, Nevada, when the old silver mines there and gold mines all of a sudden struck it rich in the early 1800s. Now, they started following this prospect line all the way north through Nevada into California, eastern Oregon, Washington State, before crossing the bridge, or crossing the bridge border, pardon me, into British Columbia. It made its way north, and people would have to stop along the way in order to catch a river boat up to a little town named Yale. And they literally carved through a trail through what we call the Fraser Canyon in the Cascade Mountains. Now, the Cascade Mountain Run is very volcanic. If you look into Washington State, that's where all the volcanoes kind of start until you go from about Mount Baker all the way down to Mount Shasta in California. And then they make their way through my town eventually. So where I'm broadcasting right now, the Gold Rush Trail is maybe a mile away from where I'm standing right now.
Are you scared?
No, but I have encountered ghosts on it, that's for sure. It's extremely haunted.
Got it. Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio. Tomorrow, I want you to tell us about the ghost you've run into on the Gold Rush Trail. Tomorrow night, Dave Scott on Sterling Every Damn Night.
James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Thank you. All right, let's get a couple of demented Florida stories out of the way first, then we'll move on to the lighthearted stuff. First off, how crazy is it that a woman who lives with her boyfriend and her 11-year-old daughter is suspicious of the 11-year-old daughter for cheating with the boyfriend? As if it's not psycho enough that a mom would accuse her 11-year-old daughter of sleeping with mom's boyfriend. Local news here finishes the story.
But apparently this woman believed that it was and took her daughter into her car and at some point stabbed her more than a dozen times before taking her to Winnie Palmer Hospital, where obviously the girl was pronounced dead. The mother was arrested. She's facing a first-degree murder charge.
So there's all kinds of levels of crazy on this one. Strangely enough, they arrived at the hospital here 10:45 a.m. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
We're going to go over to Pensacola. The story starts with a 9-year-old who was adopted by a much older than average couple. And the claim in the story here is that she suffered horrific beatings from her adoptive parents. And this older couple had a friend who lived down the street named Veronica. And she loved beating children, too. So one day, as she was helping her friends beat their adoptive 9-year-old daughter, the 320-pound Veronica sits on the 9-year-old girl for about 5 minutes. When she got off, she was not breathing. She had asphyxiated and died from a lack of oxygen. Don't worry, the 320-pound Florida woman has now been sentenced to life for sitting on the child.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Polk County, Florida. And I love this new trend where sheriffs and other law enforcement officers try and make a name for themselves on social media by being real bombastic or comedic about some of the criminals they're chasing. And that's what's happening here. Some criminal mastermind who broke into a Cricket Wireless store in Winnetta had on a black tank top, blue jeans, and we also noticed he had red undies because he had problems keeping his pants up. And the sheriff's office poked a little fun about it on Facebook. They said he's about as skilled as securing his pants as he is about being a decent person. Seriously, you're going to break into someone's business and then flip them off on their security camera? Dude, so not cool. That's right. The sheriff's office called him dude. So the sheriff has dubbed the man the Red Briefs Burglar. And I'm sure justice can't be far behind. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go down to Destin, where a visitor from Missouri, 27-year-old, was hanging out in Destin on the beach with a bunch of his friends. And then around 2 a.m., he went out on the 8th-floor balcony to smoke a cigarette, accidentally falls off the balcony to his death. File this one under absolutely normal people from otherwise normal states going to Florida and end up doing something crazy.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go down to Castleberry, Florida. Florida man shows up at a Winn-Dixie, checks the place out, leaves, soon returns, but this time he's wearing a Spider-Man mask. He goes up to the liquor counter, steals about $150 in liquor and $420 in Newport cigarettes. Clearly, this criminal mastermind has been arrested before. He is a repeat offender, and he was easily identified because the only thing different about him than from when he had been in the store just a few minutes ago was a Spider-Man mask. Master of disguise, Florida man. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
We're going to go down to the Tampa area, and I'm just going to read you a headline. Bubba the Love Sponge sues Cox, claiming ratings sting operation. Okay, whatever that is, just hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go down to Fort Lauderdale. A Florida man has to go to the bathroom. When he lifts the lid on the toilet, there is a giant, bright green iguana swimming in his toilet. So he freaked out, didn't know what to do. Called 911. Firefighter shows up. His name's Jeff. Jeff puts on the plastic gloves, reaches in the toilet, grabs the iguana. He took it outside, and he let go of it. I understand it's unusual to find an iguana swimming in your toilet. But if you do, just reach down and grab him. Take him outside and open your hand. It is that easy, Florida man. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to go down to the Tampa area again. And around 100 years ago, there was a lab outside of Tampa. And it was working on the polio vaccine. And they used to experiment on spider monkeys and other types of primates. A group of monkeys escaped from this experimental science lab and populated the wild around Tampa. After they were causing some chaos on the mainland with the humans nearby, the Florida men rounded up the monkeys and sent them to an island that is in the middle of a river just north of Tampa. The monkeys don't like to swim, and so there have been residents of monkeys on this island for almost 100 years. Currently, there's a family of 5 spider monkeys, and they are there year-round, and you can actually take a canoe or a kayak up close to Monkey Island, but you're not allowed to get on Monkey Island, and you're not allowed to interact with the monkeys. However, it's a very popular sightseeing destination, and there's a local resort that takes care of the monkeys and keeps them fed on a regular basis. And that's Monkey Island. That sounds awesome. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
All right, for our final Florida story of the week, this is an update on a Florida story I actually brought to you last episode. We return to Port Richey, Florida. Last week, I told you about the Florida mayor that was arrested in a SWAT raid because of unlicensed medical practice and then some other corruption charges thrown on top of that. Well, I am here to tell you just a week later that the guy who took over the mayor's job and has been the acting mayor of Port Richey, Florida, his name's Terrence. He has been arrested.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What a shock here in Port Richey tonight. You know, this recent arrest actually connects back to the former mayor's arrest. So now you have not one, but 2 mayors behind bars.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What
a Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
It's that special time of year with Walter Sterling. That's me. And this radio station, KMOX, KMBZ, giant radio stations across the country, KFBK, welcome. It's actually a show that isn't about screaming at the politicians. It's hopefully vague entertainment to get us from the weekend where we suffered with our relatives, our in-laws, to the weekday when you and I can work on the late shift, the third shift, the great shift, driving the 18-wheeler across the country, up and down I-4 in Florida, right through Sebring, 91 to Maine, Sterling every damn Sunday. Now, I'll tell you a secret. I'm here every night. It's Sterling every damn night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern. Now, you can hear me 6 nights a week on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, Audacy. Terrible name, great radio company. You can hear me on the Audacy app every night. I would suggest you download it and then listen to me. Or download it and just turn it on, and that way I get credit. It really doesn't matter. Either way, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. On the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. And then for a couple days after, 3 or 4 days after this show, you can get it online. You can get it on the app. You can listen to it on demand. Why you'd want to listen to a talk show on demand, I don't know, but you can. The Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. I have a website, Walter Sterling Show. On the website, you find out fascinating things about the show. You will see pictures, photographs that you will not see anyplace else, scandalous photographs, information about the features, especially about Florida stories. The great James Parker does Florida stories, and I thank him for doing it, even though he has a day job. The interesting thing about everybody who does a feature on this show is they all have day jobs. They all are doing other things that are far more important and significant, but they all came to me. And I can't give them any of them jobs. I have no power. I have no juice. I'm not that guy anymore. They can come here and do whatever they want. They make these great features that you love, and they just do them. And I'll tell you the other secret, probably the riskiest thing I do. I don't listen to them before they go on the air. I just put them on the air. That's how much I trust these people. And then we have a musical director. Lee Harris is our musical director. A powerful, brilliant broadcaster. And again, the guy is like he's a real guy. He's not like me. He's a real guy. And he makes, he's our musical director. And I'll leave it at that. Exciting, huh? An email, and I try to answer every email. WalterMSterling@gmail. WalterMSterling@gmail. And that's where you need to send a note asking for the JB Bakery recipe. What the heck did he give a recipe for? I can't believe I forgot that. But you send me, whatever it was, I'll send you that recipe. You'll get it right away. His recipes are fun and easy to do, but he does them smart. They're easy to follow, and then there are cool photographs on them. You know. But we're entering that time of year, which is torture for us grown-ups. It's torture because it involves coordinated outdoor activity. And we don't have the clothes for it. We're either forced to go to a pick-your-own apple orchard, which is an amazing economics. Here's this guy's got an apple farm, right? He's got an apple orchard. Row after row of different, usually different kinds of apples. And we get a basket, and we walk through the muddy fields. And then when we get to a row of apples that you go, wow, that looks really good, there's a rope on that one. Don't go in here. No admission. The best apples always have a sign at the end of the aisle that says no admission, right? Right? Now you walk up the hill a little more. And here's the trick. At this time of year, you're dressed in normal clothes, but the more you go up the hill, the hotter it gets, to the point where you're up to the 10th row of apples. You're sweating. And there's nothing you can do. Because you have to carry whatever you do. If you have a sweater and you take it off, now you got to carry the sweater, and you have to carry the bushel of apples. You start to fill up your basket with apples, and then you go. You hear, and you look down, and your shoes are now covered with mud. You don't have apple picking boots on. You have on your expensive city slicker shoes. Your city slicker shoes, the ones you wore to the meeting with the grown-ups. You got those shoes on. Now they're ruined. They're covered with mud. And you got your 8-year-old and you got your 12-year-old and they're slip sliding in the mud and they're upset. And this is too hard, Daddy. Oh, no, we're not too hard. We're here to pick apples and we're here to have fun. Do you understand? Have fun. You pick the apples. Then the scam comes this way. You take your bucket of apples, your bushel of apples, which is now heavy, and you go down the hill, and there's the farmer's daughter in the little hut weighing the apples with her register, her iPad, and saying, that'll be $18, $18 for a pound of apples. You could get the steak for better than that. $18 for the pound of apples. At Kroger's, you could have gotten it for $3. But now you've suffered the joy of apple picking. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my award-winning book, Disintegration. Hallam stood in his bathroom. A handful of blue and red pills lay in his palm. Anti-rejection drugs, Vlad had said the first time he gave him the bottles. He washed them down with a glass of water while trying to ignore the mirror over the sink. The synthetic skin covered most of his face. The burnished black material extended down his neck and over both shoulders. Only his right arm was recognizable to him in the reflection. He felt the same as he always had, but his physical condition wasn't always easy to reconcile with his emotional state. When he exited to the bedroom, he saw Ro standing in the open doorway. It was unlocked, she said. Hallam nodded and moved toward the hamper to toss his used undershirt aside. She stayed half in the room, half in the hallway. You looked good in the training sessions today. I'm glad you're feeling better, and it's great they let you come back here to be on your own. He looked at her. Isn't this the part where you jump on me and beg me to screw your brains out? One eyebrow flicked upward. Is that what you want? I didn't think I had a choice in the matter. Come on, Callum. Don't do this. She entered and shut the door behind her. Crossing the room, she stood in front of him and fixed him in her stare. What's the problem here? He didn't know whether to be comforted by her appearance or annoyed by it. After all the time he'd spent with her, both in and out of bed, he never knew what was really going on behind those amber eyes. Her serious demeanor and lack of physical touch added to his turmoil. I don't know what to make of this, he said. The fact you're not all over me makes me assume you're afraid to come near me. Either because I'm secretly dying and they haven't told me yet, or I look even more vile than I did before. Seriously? Is that what you believe? I don't know. He shrugged. Each time I think I have things figured out down here, something proves me wrong. Ro put her hands on his chest. If I didn't want to be in here right now, I wouldn't be. Her fingers trailed downward, and she loosely draped her arms around his waist. But if you want me to leave, I'll go. Hallam didn't move. She hadn't erased all his doubts, and he had yet to pinpoint her intentions. Despite his hesitation, parts of him were drawn to her, unable to escape her magnetic hold. She offered him the opportunity to cling to whatever shreds of normalcy he had left, regardless of how unpredictable their carnal encounters may be. Before he could waste any more thought on his analyses, he kissed her. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, Disintegration, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. If you'd like to hear some unedited, uncensored excerpts, you can go to patreon.com/thealandon. And don't forget to share all your thoughts with me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's see what happens next. When he closed his eyes, he could imagine his body was unchanged. Her palms skimmed over the broad expanse of simulated flesh, and he responded to her sensuous explorations. She leaned against him, closing the distance between them. He hardened at the proximity of her warmth, and relief washed over him. As long as she could elicit this reaction, he would retain something that could never be removed or replaced. Ro slid her hands inside his pants. "You're in charge tonight," she murmured against his lips. "Tell me what you want." Adrenaline surged through him as the blood flowed toward her. With each stroke, more and more memories of their raw, primal encounters flooded his mind. His heart raced, and he kissed her hard. "Get on your knees." She bit his lower lip. The stinging sensation mingled with the pleasure stirring inside him, and he groaned. Ro pulled back to grin at him. "See, I knew you'd be just fine," she said. "If anything, maybe you're even better than you were before." Another jolt of pain spiked through his body as she shoved him against the wall. Hallam grabbed her around the waist and crushed her against him. She licked a line from his jawbone down his neck and over his smooth chest. Her tongue swirled around and his breath caught in his throat. She giggled before continuing farther along her path. When she reached the top of his pants, she undid the closure with her teeth. A woman of many talents, he thought. She pushed the clothing away, exposing him to the cool, sterile air. As his pants fell to the floor, she followed them and knelt at his feet. "Are you sure this is what you want?" she said, batting her eyelashes as she gazed up at him. "You're talking when you should be using your mouth for something else." "Oh, I think I should stop here tonight before I get into trouble. But you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my award-winning book, Disintegration, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. For access to some uncensored readings, plus additional bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/thealandon. And don't forget, you can always send me your innermost thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Lesbians in Space.
Date idea: since football season is coming up, we watch every single football game together, and whenever there's a first down, we kiss. Because who doesn't love football and kissing? I know I do.
Lesbians in Space. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Malibu Barbie is not pretty.
I mean, she's just like basic, you know, like she's just like generic looking. She's like generic pretty.
She could possibly be the most beautiful person I've ever seen. Seriously,
I just wouldn't be into her is what I'm saying. I don't think she's pretty.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brooke, Big Good Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer. Business Guidance, Craig Kitchen. Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.